You're listening to No Plot, Only Lore, a podcast about games and the tables we play them at. Your DMs tonight and every night are Josh and Chris. You can find us on all podcast platforms or check us out at noplotonlylore.com. If you like what you hear today, please rate and review the show and share it with everyone you've ever met.
Welcome back to No Plot, Only Lore. Do you need a refreshing beer at the end of a long day? Look no further than Golden Gulp Brewery, coming from Golden Fields. Golden Gulp Brewery brews Golden Gulp beer, made with local hops and whatever else beer is made of. I don't actually know what beer is made of.
Local hops and glottal stops. So beer is traditionally water, hops, and malt.
What is malt?
Barley.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Just like toasted barley.
So, like, I'm obviously not a beer person. Like, I've never gotten super into beer, but the place that we work now has a free beer fridge at the office that I work out of.
Yep.
And because the beer is free, I've been drinking it, and I have acquired the taste.
Oh.
And I did not think that was ever going to be possible.
Yeah. Getting the taste for beer is probably one of my favorite parts of becoming an adult. And being able to recognize and utilize, like, knowledge of different flavors and types of beer, and it all doesn't just taste like beer, it's been great.
I feel like I need to point out that, like, I am a 42-year-old man.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is not a new, young person who is, like, finally getting into beer, right? Like, I didn't have a college beer phase. I've never been, like, a craft beer person.
No.
I drink whatever the free stuff is at work, and that is it. But
it sounds like somebody at work is, like, a beer person, though, and has been selecting things for you guys.
Several people are very into beer.
Okay.
At the office, yeah.
That sounds awesome.
The guy who set up the beer fridge to begin with, is obviously a big beer guy, because like he went out and spent thousands of dollars on a fridge that he built keg taps into.
Oh, God bless that man.
Yeah, it's a glorious thing, and he has fought tooth and nail through several acquisitions now that like Beer O'Clock is enshrined in what we do, and if you mess with it, then he and the people that are loyal to him are leaving forever.
It's definitely a huge part of company culture to be able to like share a beer, you know, in other parts of the world, but here I think it deserves more respect than it gets. Like North America has North America has this weird attitude about beer and the people who drink it and how you should drink it, that I think does a disservice to, you know, the casual beer enjoyer. Go ahead.
If you needed a word to describe my beer enjoying, casual would be the one.
Yeah, and that's the way I think beer should be enjoyed. Like, it shouldn't be a competition or a sport, as some people sort of treat it.
Well, and, like, being in Victoria, like, being in the middle of, like, hipster central Canada.
Yeah.
The microbrews and the, like, small in-house breweries and things are like so big here.
Yeah.
Such a huge deal. And I still don't get it. Like, if you took me on a beer tour, I would probably have a very bad time for most of it. But there would be like three beers that you gave me that I would enjoy, and I wouldn't be able to tell you why.
Yeah. At least for me, I know why I enjoy certain beers, and I can seek out beers like that, which is great. But we do have our fair share of insufferable beer nerds here. A friend of mine manages an insufferable beer tap room. So
is that its name? Like, is it insufferable in like giant block letters just above the brick facade?
That actually, that would sell me harder on a beer if they were just like, yeah, we're tough to be around, but the beer tastes good.
Good.
But yeah, like there's been our fair share of local breweries. I'm not saying all local breweries are insufferable. Like, what I can think of right now that's like actually just like due to like beer is Yellowhead.
Okay.
So they're like pretty unassuming. They got a little tap room downtown. You can, you know, go there, get your growler filled for like less than $10 and just go home and enjoy a decent, like they seem to have a lot of like lighter pilsners and stuff. So, you know, that's that kind of like beer o'clock after work. I'm done all my hard labor. I'm just going to have a beer to refresh and cool down and hang out with some people. That's what they specialize in. So I really like that. I am done with, I don't need spicy beers. I don't need beers that are like a challenge, you know?
So, I mean, hearkening back to my roots as the sort of person who doesn't drink beer, my favorite beers when I was younger were all like very fruity.
Yeah.
Right? Like it all had like sweet hints and like a blueberry beer or whatever. And lately we have the Hoyne Brewery out here. I think that might be Canada wide. Like I have no idea about any beer brands.
Never heard of it.
Fantastic. And they have a beer that they call Dark Matter that doesn't have a real classification. Like it's somewhere between a stout and something else.
Yeah.
And that one is my favorite right now because it's got like some sweet notes to it. It's very mellow. It isn't like super bitter.
Yeah.
But again, I couldn't describe the flavor in anything other than like culinary terms because I don't know what hops taste like for realsies.
No, if it's spicy and bitter, that's hops.
Oh, gross. Yeah.
No, cool. Keep those away from me. What you're looking at with like a porter like that, like I love a Guinness or something like that, those are malty flavors. That's what you want is the malts. Malts are that like rich, umami, unctuous, dark. I love reds and darks and things like that. So yeah, that's my wheelhouse. That's the fun.
Neat. I have never been able to get into Guinness specifically, which I mean,
it's
I know it's blasphemy to some, but
listen, I get it. It's a lot, but it's like as someone who's visited like the Guinness brewery in Ireland and like it's a lot of work. I get it. But I feel the effort is worth it.
It has the texture of carbonated milk, and I feel like I should chew it.
You should. It's it's bread in a glass.
Yeah. No, it's ridiculous. Anyway, this is not a beer podcast. We could probably make a beer podcast.
We could do a whole Patreon episode just about beer.
Nothing but beer. All day, every day. No, we're a podcast about games and the tables we play them at. And we are continuing our series today of Steal Everything. This is Steal Everything 3. George Pulte. How big a fan are you of George Pulte's?
When you told me what we were talking about, I literally said, who is that?
Yeah. So George Pulte was a French writer. Like he was born in America, but he moved to Paris. He wrote a bunch of books. One of the, like, I haven't read his books, so I'm not, like, as pretentious as I could be. This is just me pretending and stuff. But one of the books that he wrote, let's see if I can find that. Something about just, like, a sad Shakespeare.
Oh, wow, that sounds great. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, just fantastic. But what George Pulte did that has been useful to me.
Okay.
In more than a couple of ways, is George Pulte sat down and he looked at all of the stories that he could think of, and he tried to figure out how many different kinds of dramatic situations there could be in a story.
7.
36.
No!
You're a little off. It's fine. That's too much. Yeah, he spent years on it. You spent less than a second. Like,
I guess he is French. He should be overly dramatic.
But yeah, he came up with 36. And like, I want to be clear that I am not a George Pulte fan. I'm not like trying to suggest that this is the be-all end-all of literary criticism. What I have found useful about this has been two major things. One, I no longer care about plot spoilers in stories.
Well, that's good.
Because there are...
Because you knew it was coming anyways?
Well, there are only a certain number of things that can happen.
Right.
Right? And, like, sometimes, very rarely, one of those things happening is like a twist and it surprises me. But the vast majority of the time, if you tell me the events of the story, I don't actually give a shit. It's how the events of the story are portrayed that have become a lot more important.
Okay.
Because I can break these things down into, like, any of these 36 divisions, any of these 36 situations.
This seems...
And then this...
Like, personally, this seems like an absolutely joyless way to consume media.
No. I actually find it more fulfilling than worrying about the plot. Like... I'm never going to be that person who is sitting in a living room when somebody starts talking about the plot of a story that they read or a story that they saw on TV and be like, no, don't tell me spoilers. Right? I don't give a shit about spoilers.
Does anybody actually do that?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
No, it's infuriating to me that like I'll be sitting there wanting to have a conversation about a story. And like, obviously, if you've been listening to this podcast for any longer than 30 seconds, you know that we spoil things on the regular.
Oh, yeah.
But like, if I have never seen a thing and I'm in a conversation or around a conversation about that thing and they tell me about a thing that happens in the plot. Okay.
You're overjoyed.
Actually, yeah, I find that knowing about what is going to happen in the story helps me better appreciate the way that the story is told.
Okay.
Right. So that is one of the things that it did. And then the second thing that it did is it has helped me improvise dramatic situations that are coming up in my games.
Okay. Because you know what beats to hit.
Not even necessarily which beats, but like I can look at a situation that we're in and then kind of rack through my Rolodex to see what would make sense as the next step for that, Rolodex, I guess. Says,
how fucking old are you?
I used the card indexes in the library to find the Wheel of Time books that I was going to read.
No plot, only old.
No plot, only old. The lore is my age. It's just all the things I've experienced up until now. Back in the before times.
Anyways,
so what I kind of figured we could do today is I would hit you with a dramatic situation from the 36 dramatic situations list. And then we would see how that could possibly be applied to a role-playing game scenario.
The 36 dramatic situations list is my favorite Wu-Tang album.
You know what? If they did put out like an album named that, it wouldn't even surprise me.
It's zero. Just, yeah, okay, yep.
Yep, no, that tracks. All right, so the first one, and I'm not going to be going in order of the book. I'm just going to be going through like various things. And I guess like I should explain a little bit about the way that the list is put together. So,
right.
The way that Pulte put the list together, he comes up with the situation, whatever that situation is, and then he lays out which characters would typically be involved in that.
Okay.
So the first example that we have here is supplication, and then the characters that are involved are a persecutor, the person who is supplicating themselves, and a power in authority whose decision is in doubt. Right, so you have somebody who is trying to hurt somebody else, somebody who is asking somebody who has power to help them, and the person in power may or may not decide to help them.
Okay.
Then there's like a couple of possible variants on it. Okay. So like for the supplication one, there's like the supplicant appeals to the power for deliverance from the persecutor. The power and authority may be a distinct person, or could just be an attribute of the persecutor. So like the persecutor has a gun pointed at your head. You could be appealing to, in some way, the gun, trying to like get the gun to do a thing.
Oh, okay. I see.
Right.
Sort of,
right. Like it's vague on purpose. And that's part of the problem with this list, right? Like you can't, it isn't a particularly effective tool for literary criticism.
Right.
Because, like, as soon as you say there are 36 things and then you put, but there are variations on those things, you're like, no, that's more than 36 things now, George.
Yeah.
we have more things than that. put some of your things back. So I think a pretty easy one for role-playing games, Pursuit.
Pursuit, okay.
Pursuit, and the people that are in play, the forces that are in play for this, are a punishment and a fugitive.
Okay. So the, right, and the a punishment being like, it could be a physical person.
It could be a physical person, somebody who is going to show up and beat the tar out of you.
Right.
Or it could be running away from somebody who's mad because you don't want to be involved in that conversation.
Right.
Or it could be trying to avoid some sort of like legal repercussions for a thing. Right. So any of those makes sense.
Okay.
So like that one I feel is obvious. That's just a straight up chase scene.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, I guess like in a larger sense, like there's been the Avenger class from 4th edition is like the personification of this. Like they are the punishment and they are hunting down something or someone, you know. I think
that's interesting.
The
that case, who would the fugitive be? I guess it would be whoever they're
chasing. It's their target, right? Because like they did something sort. The Avenging Paladin has a similar flavor to it, where they're all about like, hey, there's this like one person that I'm heading after to avenge or whatever. But yeah,
okay. I'm gonna go for one that's a little weirder now.
Okay.
Falling prey to cruelty or misfortune. So the forces in this are an unfortunate, somebody who is affected by the misfortune, a master or a misfortune. So either the person who is being cruel or the misfortune itself.
Okay.
What do you got for me, Josh?
The easiest answer is like a. Okay, well, maybe tell me if I'm misunderstanding this example. Because you used the biblical example here of Job, I'm going to use a different example of there was a servant. A royal food taster for the Pharaoh in the time of Daniel, who was thrown in jail for basically no good reason by the Pharaoh. He just displeased him, whatever. And I guess part of Daniel's arc was that eventually when this person returned to the Pharaoh's good graces, he, you know, reminded the Pharaoh about Daniel, who was still in jail at the time. Or not Daniel, sorry, Joseph. So
that would definitely fit.
Yeah. So it's like, it's like in the RPG setting, you encounter some sort of servant of the king who's fallen on hard times, but you aid them. And then they in turn later would come assist you.
Yeah. I think like my head immediately goes to the pop culture reference of Aladdin getting thrown in the slammer.
Mm.
Right. So like the master in that case would be the law who has been chasing him down for some time. And because he helped somebody, he's now in a position where somebody has done him a badness and has thrown him in jail.
Right.
And, like, I guess with the dramatic situations, there's no inherent resolution all the time.
Yeah,
like, it's sometimes it's all set up, and then you get, like, the payoff afterwards, or through, like, a different dramatic situation, you end up getting that payoff. But this is just like, yeah, you're doing a thing, you're going through your day. Maybe the most classic example of this would be the Count of Monte Cristo.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And again, that's a lot of getting thrown in jail. but like, I guess like, I don't know, you could do like getting beaten on the street.
Right.
As an example, or like, I don't know, just losing all your money.
Right.
Yeah. The classic, this is the classic role-playing game fantasy trope dramatic situation, and it is the Daring Enterprise.
Daring Enterprise.
Where you have a bold leader, an object, and an adversary.
Right.
This is, like, the examples that are thrown here. The one that I think resonates the best with our audience is The Lord of the Rings.
Right.
Where you have a bold leader, or several bold leaders. And then the object of The Lord of the Rings is mostly the ring. And then some guy who has a really bad case of pink eye in a faraway place.
Okay. Your description of some guy with a bad case of pink eye.
It's really got to, like, get some ointment on that or something. Like, it's literally on fire. That's never a good sign.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out what exactly you want me to do in this exercise, then. Did you just wrap it up in a neat bow for me?
Well, I mean, I just went with Lord of the Rings for this one. Like, what would you do with this that I guess might be a little off the beaten for Daring Enterprise?
A retired cat burglar is looking to steal his wife's pacemaker back from the crematorium, and the overnight security guard is preventing him.
Okay. Love it. I'm only going to put in one note. I think the wife should still be alive.
Why would they have her pacemaker at the crematorium then?
Great question. Maybe she works there.
Who took the pacemaker out? It's a pacemaker.
No. The cat burglar is trying to get, like, the team of people who he is leading to get the pacemaker out of her chest.
Oh, she's the adversary. I see.
She is the adversary in this situation.
Okay.
One thing that I've seen with this that I think is kind of neat is when the player characters are the adversary.
Yeah.
All right, so you have a group of people, or, like, one person who has a goal that is specifically set against the player characters. And then, like, you can play that with the cute, like, oh, here's, like, a level 5 crew, we're level 7, and they think that they're going to take us down for this dingus that we picked up three adventures ago. But, like, I usually find it better to, like, pick some shitty thing the player characters have done.
Right.
And then make a quest about it.
Yeah. Right, and I do that so rarely is turning the tables back on my groups. I should do it more often. I'm just a piece of garbage. I don't know.
I need to do it more often with this crew. Because, like, I don't know if you remember a few episodes ago where we were talking about how incredibly quickly my table turned to torture.
Yes. Almost instantly. Yeah.
Almost instantaneously. It was like, as soon as they had prisoners, they were like, cool, where's the sharp bits?
Yeah. Exactly.
Where do we get that, like, little rollout leather pouch with all of the little, like, knives and doodads and things?
Where's my stainless steel testicle twisters?
And, like, they're the only people on Eberron who could ostensibly get off the planet.
Yeah.
So, I don't know how I'm going to work that yet, but I really feel like that needs to come back to bite them in the ass.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. There's got to be consequences to being, like, that is worse than murder hobo behavior, for sure.
Well, they killed a guy.
Right? Yeah.
Like, they killed a guy, and then they brought him back to life, and then immediately thought about torturing him to death again.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, murder hoboing has this sense of, like, I want to say just, like, there's no, like, maliciousness in the action, you know? You're just like, well, you know, he's just in the way. But this is definitely a lot more, like, directed.
A little bit. It felt personal.
Yeah.
That's definitely a thing I need to do more often, is just kind of, like, reverse that role. One other thing that I have seen done with this that can be kind of fun is you make the player characters the object.
Oh, okay.
So, like, they are the daring enterprise that needs to be retrieved.
Right.
Or, like, somehow neutralized. You need to throw this party of people into a volcano.
I like that idea.
Yeah, I've done it less often than I have bringing back, like, some guy that's been wronged in the past. But there are definitely some fun things that you can do with that.
Well, it sounds like there's plenty of guys who they have wronged, so you probably have time.
Yeah. Well, and, like, you can also choose just one player to be the object.
True.
So, like, if there was any weird social interaction that happened quite some time ago that you feel needs recompense, then you have the option for that. That one I've done a bit. Where, yeah. Like, one of my player characters plays a gnomish artificer with an obsession with aliens and dragons.
Oh, those are the same.
And well, that's his thinking too, is that aliens fucked dinosaurs and that's where dragons came from.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So his character has self-published a book about this and has been drummed out of the university that he used to work at.
Why?
And has, like,
for speaking the truth?
Yeah, basically. It's all a conspiracy. They're all trying to silence him.
Right, of course.
So he gets drummed out. But, like, he's had a couple of academic rivals show up. Like, one of the big bads from the first act was actually, like, somebody who worked at the university that he got kicked out of.
Okay.
And, like, having those personal enmities show up where it's just, like, you have a guy standing on your doorstep screaming your name.
Yeah.
Calling you out is just a great dramatic moment for me.
Sure.
Let's see. Let's try a weird one here. Oh, here's one that would be difficult to do in a role-playing game scenario. Murderous adultery.
Oh, Jesus.
So the forces involved in this one are two adulterers, possibly more.
It this usually was written takes in the 1860s. At least two.
At least two, at most, question mark?
Yeah.
And at least one betrayed spouse.
Okay. Oh, God. So I'll just tell you my first, like, gut instinct right now.
Yeah.
Is like you cannot have anyone in the party, like, be any of these main characters in this idea.
Have you met bards?
Okay, well, I do my best to steer people away from their own stupid instincts, so I don't allow bards at my tables.
Yeah, as soon as you find out that it's a bard, you try really hard to make them a paladin and then kill their character.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's called a callback. We are a comedy podcast.
I think that might be my first, like, comedy callback. Oh no, I gotta tone it down. I'm not supposed to be the funny one.
Yeah, that's fine. It's infectious. So I guess in that scenario, yeah, the bard has used their wiles to seduce a guard, and then the guard's wife finds out and wants to murder the party.
Mm-hmm.
Or Solid the one. Bard fucked a dragon, and now the dragon's husband found out and wants to murder the party.
Man, can you imagine that as the plot twist to seducing the dragon?
Is that the dragon's husband comes home while you're in coitus and...
Yeah, the dragon's husband or wife comes home and is, like, fucking pissed. And there's, like, no seducing that second dragon. Well, maybe. I guess it kind of depends on their dynamic.
maybe that's how this dragon learns that they are a cuckold.
Yeah. Yeah, this is... Or, like, you get into a really awkward conversation where, like, they're poly, but this kind of goes outside of their agreements, so they have to have, like, a sit-down conversation, and you have to have, like, tea with the cuckolded spouse in this situation. The more I'm thinking about that, the more awkward it becomes, and I love it.
This was really, truly a great week for my mother to announce to me that she now listens to our podcast sometimes.
Oh, man, so, do you remember when we used to talk about how this was your mom's favorite podcast?
I remember that. It was a lie. She hadn't listened to a second of it until this week, where she was like, you dropped an F-bomb. And I'm like, uh-oh. And then she's like, hey, what about that stuff about being a disappointment to your parents? Should we talk about that? And I'm like, I'd really rather not.
Which is great for me, because that's like 31 episodes ago as of this recording.
Yeah.
So like, that's such a distant memory. You being a disappointment. Well, I mean, you being a disappointment to your parents is still pretty reasonable.
No,
like,
that's pretty real and raw and fresh.
Sorry, Josh's mom. Didn't mean to. When she's like an avid listener, this is going to be a real rough one for her.
I cannot wait to kill my mom's character when she starts playing D&D with all of her bike club.
Fantastic. I love the idea of the player character potentially being the cuckolded spouse.
Yeah.
I just
don't like putting that like RP weight onto one of my players. I think
it's... Oh no, that's something that you would definitely have to like discuss well before.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm a Saturday morning cartoons DM. That's not a story I'm really interested in exploring with my table, but I mean, more power to you if you do, I guess.
If neither of those was available, there are some options that could be hilarious.
Okay, go on.
So like, you have the two adulterers, you have the betrayed spouse. The betrayed spouse, because this has to be murderous adultery.
Yes.
The betrayed spouse has to hire somebody to kill at least one of these participants.
Yeah.
And that has the potential for hijinks, especially if we go back to This Is Dragons. Bard.
You're not wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. That has an interesting adventure written. I kind of want to write that adventure now.
Hey, you know what? You called it. You got it. It's all right. You, friend.
Fantastic. Some of these don't really work for like moments that you want to introduce to a game. I mean, they could, I guess, but like involuntary crimes of love.
Oh, we're just back to the murder thing.
Murder's fine. Like, there's a lot of murder in stories.
No, I'm just saying we're back to the involuntary crime of love. Or is that different fundamentally from a crime of passion?
I think it would be different from a crime of passion. I think it would be like, so the description that we have here is the lover of the beloved. So we have a lover, a beloved, and a revealer. The lover and the beloved have unknowingly broken a taboo through their romantic relationship.
Oh.
And the revealer reveals this to them. And the example given is Oedipus. So maybe we should skip this one.
Hey, you know what? Guess what I'm definitely not doing in my D&D game?
I think
my mother will be happier over my F-bomb than the inclusion of Oedipus in one of my campaigns.
I should hope so. I'm trying to think of like other possibilities for this, because like the one that I'm thinking of, and I fucking hate this, because did you ever read Terry Goodkind's books?
No.
Okay, they're terrible, so don't.
Yeah, that's why I didn't.
Yeah, no, they're just dog shit.
The first one was
kind of fun when I was 14 and didn't know anything.
Okay.
And then the second one was bad, and the third one was bad, and the fourth one was bad. And I don't know why. No, I do know why I kept reading them. They were the thickest books I could find at the library that I hadn't read yet.
I feel like that's like a good chunk of Terry's audience and sales. Yep. Is just like people who need a weapon.
Yeah. Like, I was looking for more Robert Jordan, and I settled for Terry Goodkind.
I see. Yeah.
But there's one book where the solution to the magical problem is to sculpt statues, I guess.
Okay.
and then somebody has to get to fucking. And it has to be, for some reason, the main character's brother and his wife.
What? Why?
I don't know. Because the books are terrible. But, like, in that situation, the main character scooted his brother out so that he was involved, but then his wife started to enjoy it, not knowing that it was him.
What is happening? Why? Why? Why did I have to hear that?
The biggest thing to take away from this, is that I don't want to roleplay this situation even a little bit.
Yeah! All of this sounds terrible. Why are we here? Jesus.
It's George Pulte's 36 dramatic situations is not a perfect tool.
George, you suck. You suck hard. Okay? I hate you.
Alright, let's go for one that's a little more on the beaten. Self-sacrifice for an ideal.
Oh, that's okay. There's so many. If you ever played a divine character, every one of them is like, if even a little bit of religious influence, just like, yeah, I'm going to kill myself for Jesus or whatever. Like, that's so easy. I think the other way to do it, though, is to look at. I've seen some ideas or stories around, like, what would you call them? So, like, in, like, any sort of sacrifice ritual, there are sometimes super willing participants, you know?
Like, too willing?
Yeah, like, people who've just been, like, either brainwashed or, like, genuinely believe, like, no, like, this is, I want to do this, I want to sacrifice myself for X, Y, or Z. Because, you know, it's like the highest calling you could have in life or whatever. So I've liked stories sometimes that like explore those characters' point of view. So you could have that be like a favorite NPC of the group who is like, yeah, no, it's okay, guys. Like I want to, you know, join the, whoever the fuck in some, I don't know, I'm trying to make up a sacrifice cult on the fly, and I'm not.
I was just immediately going to Cthulhu, just like, no, yeah, Cthulhu yeah, wants me, and I want him back.
Yeah, Cthulhu's my space daddy, or whatever the fuck is going on.
That is actually really interesting. That's an angle that I hadn't considered.
Okay, well, you're welcome.
One thing that I do like to do with this one is, so like the powers involved here are a hero, who does the sacrificing, an ideal, whatever that happens to be, a creditor, or a person or thing that is sacrificed.
Right.
And I like to make the situation such that the creditor is just kind of a shitty person.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, if somebody needs to sacrifice for an ideal by doing something like selling themselves into slavery, right, then that, I think, contains a bit more interest than just, like, throwing yourself on your sword for God.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, this is not just a small self-sacrifice. This is, like, the rest of your life in indentured servitude because of something that you believe.
So I
think that can be particularly interesting. And then also, like, the person-thing-sacrificed note here is just like, you're willing to self-sacrifice, you're willing to kill yourself to do the thing, but somebody else gets killed anyway.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I don't necessarily want to go down the Gollum route of like, Gollum gets sacrificed because he's being selfish or whatever, but just like, your character who's just like too willing to be like, no, Space Daddy, take me, could be an interesting take on that.
Yeah. I'm trying to recall, there was, for some reason I've been watching a little bit of like CR related content lately, even though I don't actually want to watch anything CR.
Okay.
But they were talking about a storyline that, what's his name's girlfriend had worked through, where basically she like, I don't know what the situation was, but she basically just decided to like throw her character on their own sword and be like, that's okay, I'm gonna retire and you guys go live your better life without me. And it just, it kind of didn't make any sense why she would make that choice. So I would encourage caution in encouraging people to the crack Suicide Squad from Life of Brian, where their first instinct is to give themselves up. But I think there, I haven't found an excuse yet that justifies that kind of behavior, but I can see how it'd be useful in a potential campaign.
I have a character, like a player character in the game that I'm in right now, who's kind of in a self-sacrifice position. So like our campaign, we picked up this like horrifying piece of a demon that infects anything that it touches and like slowly corrupts them or whatever. And he is a cleric who has decided to take that with him to find a way to dispose of it.
Okay.
And it is doing the thing that it is supposed to do. It is slowly corrupting him and like slowly turning him, against his fellows and stuff.
Okay.
And that has actually been one of the more interesting parts of the campaign for the last little bit, right? It's just like that dynamic between him and that like evil thing that is corrupting him has actually been like a lot of fun to roleplay through. So that's been neat. So maybe you just need a big corrupting rock to throw at your players.
Well, we had a corrupting rock in our campaign for a little bit. We found a crystal in a cave that turns out to be like psychically linked to mind flayers, and it made us go a little bit crazy when we held it, but we all kind of took turns holding it and followed the whispers it put in our ears, and it turns out this campaign has friendly gnomish mind flayers, which are like a thing.
That's very Baldur's Gate 3, and I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah, I don't know. It was printed in the book, so I just went with it.
There's a lot of, like, a weird amount of friendly mind flayers.
Any amount of friendly mind flayers is a weird amount of friendly mind flayers.
Yeah, like, if I had a nickel for every time there was friendly mind flayers in a thing that I'm tangentially related to, I'd have two nickels. But it's still weird that it happened twice, right? Yeah. Like, the, yeah. Doofenshmirtz fucking nailed it. Yeah, like, mind flayers shouldn't be nice.
No.
They should never be your friends.
And they have the word flayer in their name.
Yeah.
That's like, pretty obvious.
I mean, I don't want to be racist.
Like, no, I'm going to be racist. This is my state-sanctioned racism hour, and it's against mind flayers.
If your whole thing is flaying minds,
yeah,
it's going to be hard to make friends.
Yeah.
yeah. And yeah, it's such a weird impulse on the part of the writers, I feel, to take like a thing that is undeniably evil.
Right.
And then try to redeem it somehow and like make it.
You see it all the time though, in like every form of media where it's like, hey, this race is called the baby smoothie drinkers, and we're gonna, what if one of them wasn't so bad? And this is like, this was kind of the annoyed criticism I had for like some of the 5.5 changes where they're like, maybe orcs aren't evil, where I'm like, maybe they are though. Like, leave them alone. Like this.
Yeah.
Have you seen,
I guess that's like legitimately the complaint that I have about Drizzt Do'Urden.
Is that he's the one baby drinker who gets to have a heroic arc, and everyone else is...
Except that he was just the first baby drinker that got to drink the babies.
Right.
And got out, and then now...
Put this idea in people's heads that maybe baby drinkers are actually all good.
Yeah, like the drow are morally ambiguous now, where before they were spider-worshipping asshats.
Yeah, games need assholes. Give us back our assholes.
Yeah, like it just a few, like even just the tentacle faced monster ones.
Yeah,
like, that I can understand wanting to have like a complex imagination about an orc.
Sure,
because like they are
kind
player
of
characters, right? They the amount of player agency that you have to have in that is different, but like, a fucking Mind Flayer?
Yeah. Like, okay,
well, motherfucker eats brains.
They're player characters now, but only because people wanted to play the bad guys, you know? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Also, just brief sidebar, have you seen the new orcish art direction in the 2024 handbook?
The cowboy
orcs? Yeah, cowboy orcs.
Yeah. Into it.
Nope. No.
Into it.
No. Orcs are Mongolians.
They don't have to be.
They should be. They're so good as Mongolians.
They are good as Mongolians, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with continuing with your Mongolian orcs, but again, like, if you're gonna do a species...
Right.
Understanding that that species will have variation in it.
I don't have a problem with orcs being cowboys. I have a problem with cowboys being in Dungeons & Dragons.
No, that's fair.
That's my main concern, is that you've turned my high fantasy game into a yeehaw hoedown, and yeah. I don't want that, ever.
I was talking to my son over dinner recently about the fact that, like, a samurai and a cowboy and a Victorian princess could all ride the same train, and that wouldn't actually be impossible.
Yep.
Because, like, all of those things were happening at the same times. And yeah, he was just like, I'm sorry, what? That doesn't sound like it should be possible.
It is, and it was not as long ago as you thought it was.
I mean, the samurai wouldn't have left Japan, probably.
No, because everywhere else sucks, right? And Japan's the best. Glorious Nippon.
I mean, I think that there was a story of, like, one samurai who ended up staying in Spain after an emperor made a jaunt over there. And, like, there's an entire, like, Japanese family that has come around in Spain because of that. But, like, the fact that I even know that there is one story suggests that it does not happen a lot.
No. hold on. Did you send me the info, or did I happen across it elsewhere, about the guy who was a trader going back and forth to Japan in, like, the 15th century or something like that? And basically got his trading license revoked because he kept bringing back Japanese smut.
No.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, real guy. Real guy. He made, like, several voyages on behalf of, I think it was, like, Spain. And, you know, brought back a bunch of the usual stuff. No big deal. And then they were like, boy, he's taking a long time on his boat on this trip. What's he hiding? And they did, like, a full audit of him, and they were like, holy God, that is some filthy cartooning. And he lost his trading license.
Man lost his trading license for bringing back tentacle hentai.
Yeah, in, like, 1500.
Fantastic.
It does give me the headcanon, though, that... Never mind, I shouldn't say this.
Okay, are you going to tell me when the mics are dead?
I just would like to imply that Christopher Columbus was big into yaoi.
That's
sorry, yeah. Mom. That, I don't know what that is either. Anyways, back to the Bible.
Okay, so let's. What do I pick now? Let's go for a light God. One. The necessity of sacrificing loved ones.
Yeah, sure. Every hero has to say goodbye to their family, and sometimes involuntarily, whatever. Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
Sounds actually pretty easy. we could do just adultery. Like, I don't know why that's different from
murderous adultery.
Yeah,
like, I think murder is number 15. The defining...
Sure, but, like, okay, so murderous adultery is number 15, and then all the way down at number 25. So 10 sections below that, we just have normal adultery. Like, I figure those
where he's just like, oh, yeah, sometimes people don't kill each other. I like him sitting there on his desk, like, God, is there another type of story to be told? Like, oh, right.
Just fucking.
Just fucking someone who's not your wife. God, how could I forget that? So much fun. Anyways.
And then Crimes of Love has another one down here, too. Oh, so that one's just, like, the Crimes of Love is voluntary in this case. So the first one is involuntary crimes
right.
of love.
Right. You do something, you commit a crime for love, as opposed to, like, your love is the crime.
We got the Romeo and Juliet with an enemy loved. That one, you need... Nope.
What?
Maybe an enemy loved. So you have, or like obstacles to love.
I love how one of the people in this situation is just a hater.
Yes. The hater.
Those are them haters, folks.
Well, one of my favorite cartoons recently is called Wander Over Yonder.
Okay.
And the main antagonist in that is named Lord Hater.
Oh, I love him.
Yeah, he's the best. He's just a giant guy with a skull for a face named Lord Hater.
Darth and Hater.
Every time he shows up on screen, there's like a metal riff that happens behind him.
Hater.
But yeah, so like, I don't know. I think anytime you're looking at like plots involving love, there's really only two tacks you can take with that.
Haters.
Or like, where do your players live? In that storyline.
Okay.
Are they involved?
Okay.
Or are they observing? Are they tangential to that? In some way? Like, does the hater want them to disrupt some stuff?
Okay.
Actually, that'd be kind of fun.
Sure.
Thinking about that as, like, an adventure prompt for, like, there's a guy who really doesn't want these two hooking up.
Yeah.
And he is going to hire your party to make sure that doesn't happen with, like, no direction.
Yeah. Just make sure they don't hook up. Good luck.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, if your characters, like, kidnap one of them and bring them somewhere, that's fine.
Yeah.
To the guy, I guess. Or, like, maybe that's a complication later where it's just, like, he didn't give you enough direction and now you've kidnapped a guy and that guy is super important for some other shit.
What do we do with all these kidnappings?
I just got a trunk full of babies right now. I don't know what to do with them.
Smoothies.
Okay, here we go. Conflict with a god.
Okay. Yeah.
So we have a mortal and an immortal.
Yeah.
And the only note on this, and I love this, is the mortal and the immortal enter a conflict. Thanks, George.
For no reason. They're just in conflict. Yeah, there's about a billion ways that can go.
Yeah, a little too many. And that's what I was saying about, like, this being, like, such a weird thought process. Like, there's another part of this that I think is kind of silly, which is just, like, the self-sacrifice section has several sections.
Yeah.
So, like, 20 is self-sacrifice for an ideal, 21 is self-sacrifice for kin, 22 is all sacrificed for a passion. 23 is the necessity of sacrificing a loved one. You could roll all of that shit up into sacrifice.
Yeah.
And well, then you would have four fewer options.
Part of me almost more understands, like, wanting to have those demarcations because, like, in theory, they manifest slightly differently, you know?
Sure. It's just when you've got so many variations of these things that are happening anyway.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the fact that we've split up murderous adultery and adultery.
Yeah.
Right? Like, one of the consequences of adultery could just be murder.
Right.
That seems like it follows. Crimes of love could be voluntary or involuntary.
Yep.
Right? We don't need to have a demarcation there necessarily.
Well, hold on. I think, in specifically the example there definitely is a reason to have a demarcation between a crime of love and a crime like, and the love itself being a crime or a crime for love. So that one I'm more on board with having a demarcation, but his language in it is not like explicit, you know?
I mean, let's also be clear that I just stole this list from Wikipedia. So like, I don't know if this is George writing it poorly or Wikipedia like
summarizing it poorly.
Yeah. And I have a feeling it's a little bit of both.
It's probably 100% both.
Yeah.
But George.
George, Wikipedia, why do I keep giving you money? Oh, yeah, because you're a valuable resource and should be free forever.
I have never given Wikipedia a penny, and I think the world is better for it.
I have given Wikipedia money because I use them all the goddamn time, and my life would be significantly worse if they didn't exist.
I don't think they should exist.
Oh?
Yeah.
That's a hot take to end the episode on. Let's get into Wikipedia.
I understand they have, like, somewhat of a, I don't know if you call it like a journalistic integrity process or whatever. They've got some sort of verification in there, but the fact of the matter is that Wikipedia is heavily bias susceptible, and you're kind of just at, like, I don't know if you've ever read the stories about how, like, a certain chunk of Wikipedia all comes down to, like, one guy cataloging stuff. I think information should be a little bit harder to get and require a little bit more personal critical thinking about, like, the source or value of it. Yeah, from everything I've seen, like, sure, you can get, like, some interesting general knowledge from Wikipedia, but, like, it's become too easy of an answer, and I super agree with the teachers who were like, hey, you can't cite Wikipedia. You have to actually go, like, read an authoritative source or whatever.
My favorite trick for that is actually just to go to Wikipedia and then look at the sources.
Yeah.
And then just read those sources.
Right. Yeah, but, like, that's not a common habit when it comes to the way the average person interacts with Wikipedia.
I guess, like, the thing for me is that I am old.
Yeah.
And come from the land of Rolodexes and card indexes. Mm-hmm. And I remember people paying for this Encyclopedia Britannica.
Yeah, I had one.
And, like, I don't know who's editing those. I don't know what kind of, like, peer review they have for that. And so when I'm reading those, and, like, they're full of things that today we know are not true. Right? Like, I don't know if you've gone looking through your Encyclopedia
Britannica. Oh, yeah. Like, just like any other historical source, you know, it has editing issues, we'll say.
it's got some things in there that we should probably take out. But yeah, like the authoritativeness of the source for it, because it isn't as rigorously edited, I find that, like, paper sources are something that I trust less and less.
Okay.
I am more likely to trust Wikipedia, especially if I've gone through some of the recent edits and just, like, seen what has happened there. Because, like, obviously you can have somebody show up. My least favorite thing about Wikipedia is that somebody will do something stupid or say something stupid, and then, like, 10 minutes later somebody will have edited their Wikipedia article to have that in the first sentence.
Yeah.
So, like, it does have some of that going on for it. You do have to be kind of careful about using it as a source, but I do think it's an incredibly valuable resource. And
so I see Wikipedia as, I would say, like, the start of a larger overall problem. And that is the breakdown of the need for people to know things and learn things, and simply, and it's been replaced by just the ability to research, like, find out an answer from, you know, Wikipedia or whatever thing they choose. Like, people don't really actually, like, research and learn anything anymore. They're just like, well, I can just find the answer because the answer is right there in Wikipedia, right?
I have heard an argument for...
You're hearing one right now, buddy.
Yeah, the argument that I'm thinking of in particular didn't involve you. Not everything involves you, Josh.
Should.
No, I've heard an argument that the way that we interface with the internet is very similar to the way that we would augment our brain if we were able to do it directly.
Yeah.
and that the habits that we're starting to form when we're referencing an outside source are very similar to what we would expect for cyborgs. And it is actually an argument for the cyborgification of the human race happening right now.
Ew. Hate that. Hate that for you. Hate that for us.
You're a cyborg, Josh.
No! I want to be a full-on android.
Hey, thanks for making it all the way through this episode of No Plot, Only Lore. If you're looking for more, you can always find us at noplotonlylore.com and on all the very best podcast platforms. If you like what you heard today, please share, rate, and review the show to feed my never-ending need for attention and validation.